says, I prophesied to people that their relative was going to be healed of cancer. And he said, we buried him. You know, so he said, I don't bat a thousand. I'm just growing in this thing and trying to hear from God. So, anyway, getting back into where we were this morning or this afternoon when I was talking about this, we're going to be talking tonight about giving and worship. Weighed how I wanted to teach this. Do I teach the three aspects of giving, then teach the three aspects of worship, or do I marry them together and do giving and worship in the three different places? And I think that's what we're going to do. As far as text in the Bible, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 14. So y'all can go ahead and turn there. Genesis 14. This will be the last place that we go to. The first two places we go to, I'm just going to make reference to them. So just hang in there with me on that. I believe that we give and we worship out of one of three places. I believe that we give and we worship out of one of three places. I believe those three places are compassion, their vision, and their honor. And all of them are good, but one of them is superior. And so I want to kind of take a journey in this tonight, and we'll get what we can and what we can't get, man. We'll come in and we'll relick it. Next Wednesday I'll be in Honduras, so we'll catch it in a couple weeks, unless James wants to come in and lick it hard next Wednesday. But let's just get what we can tonight. Giving and worship out of three places. I believe those three places are compassion, their vision, and their honor. The first that we want to talk about and look at, I believe, is probably it's the most immature form. And I don't mean that in a negative context. I mean immature like Eden is three, four. So she just acts three sometimes. She's four. She is immature because she's young. You know what I'm saying? I'm not talking about behavior. I'm talking about in relation to being mature and grown up. So when I say that giving out of compassion is the most immature, I simply mean it's the most least developed of the three places. The reason I say that is because giving out of compassion is something that everyone can do regardless of where they are with God. You don't even have to be a Christian and you can give out of compassion. You don't even have to be in deep relationship with Christ and you can worship out of compassion. So I want us to look at these, and as we look at these three different places, I want us to ask ourselves, the majority of my time and the majority of my life, which one of these places am I coming out of in giving and in worship? Now, remember, giving is not just a substance thing. It's not just monetarily. It's not just the goods and things like that. It is also our time, it's our energy, and it's our focus, okay? So when we talk about giving, it covers all of these things. And when I'm talking about that we come out of the place of compassion, that's pretty simple. It's we see a need and we're moved by that need and we feel like we need to meet that need. You know, I come in and I'm like, man, Jeff Vaughn's in the Philippines. I know that cat needs some money. So you know what I'm going to do? I really ain't got to pray about it. And I'm just going, I'm going to get on PayPal and I'm going to send him $100 or, you know, whatever. We see some homeless person and it's the middle of winter and it's just cold and all. We're like, dude, man, I feel sorry for that cat. You know, what I'm going to do, I'm going to come in and I'm going to give him $10 or I'm going to give him a blanket or I'm going to do something. That is giving out of compassion. That's giving out of compassion. If we go down to Honduras next week and we do food ministry down there, Michaela, and you're going to be involved in food ministry and all that stuff. But if we simply go down there and say, man, these folks is doggone dirt poor. And man, I'm going to give them some food and all of that stuff. And all we do is out of compassion. That is the most immature expression, least developed expression. And that will not begin to change the nation. I'm going to develop that, and I'm going to prove that to you guys in a little while. The giving out of compassion, you know what it does? It simply meets an immediate need. But like I said a while ago, even the, I'll say, non-kingdom people can give out of compassion. A lot of them do. A lot of them do. Microsoft guy, dude, globally, millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I think his goes beyond just compassion. I think he even transitions over into the vision thing. But we come in and we see a need, and so we just want to meet that need. There's nothing wrong with that. But know that it is not something that is long-term. It doesn't fix a problem. It's a Band-Aid, if you will. A good biblical reference on that would be the story of the Good Samaritan. Everybody remember the story of the Good Samaritan? The dude's going down the road, and, you know, these groups of people come by, and you got these priests and all these other jokers, and they come by, or maybe not priests, but, the religious leaders. And they, you know, some see them, and man, they see it coming, and they get on the other side, if I don't see it, it's not there, and it's not real, right? You know how we avoid bad stuff? I just don't want to talk about it and don't want to think about it. And so we get to the other side of the road, and then you had the one that came and looked on and said, "Whoa, man, that's bad. I'm going to pray for him." And then went on down the road. And then you had one joker came in, and as we know in the story, it said that he took him up, and he bound up his wounds. He carried him to the inn and said, "Man, you take care of him until he gets back to health. And then when I come back through, then I'll pay whatever the bill is. I'll pay the bill." And we talk about what an awesome, type of Christ that was and all that. And it was, and it's good, and that's an awesome thing. But you don't have to be, you don't even have to be a saved individual to be able to do that. A good-hearted heathen can do that. That's why I say it's the most immature, undeveloped expression. But how much of our giving is simply based on being moved by compassion because we see need? I'm not saying we ignore need. But I'm saying when we develop this into a more mature place, you're going to see the difference in just a second. We do it with worship also. I think I'm going to marry these and teach each one on the three different places. We do it with worship also because we come in and we feel like Jesus needs our worship. We do. You know, the word says, brother, that Jesus even told them that if they hushed their mouths, then the rocks would cry out. And we think Jesus is going to be made whole or fulfilled when we're all worshiping him and all of that. You know, it's just the right thing to do to worship Jesus, to worship God. And, you know, you look at the, I guarantee you, man, there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of drug cartel members right now that are walking around with a cross around their neck. Because they were raised a Catholic boy down in Guadalajara. And they believe in Jesus, and they believe he hung on a cross for them. And so that's their, you know, that's what I need to do because that's the right thing. I'm honoring and recognizing him. And we come in from that place of compassion that there's a need right there. And I want to tell you something, guys. Jesus doesn't need our worship. But he longs for our worship. Let me read something to you I wrote down I thought was pretty good this evening. I put on compassion on this. We feel that Jesus needs us to worship him. The rocks would cry out, I got quote unquote, if we didn't. It is the right thing to do, quote unquote. And then I put, Jesus doesn't need our worship, but he does long for it because he knows that it is a gateway to relationship. What do I mean by Jesus knows it's a gateway to relationship? True and pure worship is rightly seeing God and our response to that. True and pure worship is rightly seeing God and our response to rightly seeing God. We can't enter into deep, healthy relationship with God without rightly seeing Him. It is an impossibility. We can't enter into deep, healthy relationship with God without rightly seeing ourselves. This is the significance of what we've been hearing and teaching for the last 2 or 3 or 4 years about beloved identity. Because it is impossible for me to enter into a healthy relationship with Him if I don't rightly see myself. Because if I don't rightly see myself, that means I haven't rightly seen Him. Because when I rightly see Him, what do I see? That He's a God of love. He's a good Father. He is not sinners in the hands of an angry God. He is a Father that longs for relationship with you. So when I rightly see Him, then you know what I'm going to do? Then I'm going to start rightly seeing myself. That's why Jesus longs for our worship, because He knows that true worship means that we have rightly seen Him, and He knows that is the gateway. Right now, man, that's one of my main missions in life, is to help people rightly see God, who He is. Because if y'all can have genuine encounter with Him, if y'all can have genuine encounter with Him, I ain't got to sit up here and preach on sin. I don't have to. It takes care of itself. I don't have to teach you to husbands love your wives. Wives love your husbands and honor your husbands. I don't have to teach all that stuff. If you rightly see Him, because that's a gateway for everything. And when you rightly see Him, you rightly see yourself. And worship is the response to rightly seeing Him. Okay? That's just a little bit of a tangent right there. You know, a little bunny trail we just went down. But I think that's significant, because when we come in and we have the mindset that I'm going to work. A lot of people come in here every Sunday, man, and they what they deem their worship is simply compassion. I know Jesus, I know it's the right thing to do, and I know Jesus needs this. So in a sense, we're coming in and we're saying, I'm going to throw Him a spiritual bone. Come on. That's why people get bored in worship. Anybody in here get bored Sunday morning? Dude, I'm sorry, y'all had nerves, so y'all might have got, you know, like, oh, Lord, help. It was just free flow, and it was, I know you've heard Tiff, and I know you love that free flow, and it was just like, I'm sorry, it was amazing. I could have went for 3 more hours. I could have. Y'all could have thrown me the mic, and I could have, like, preached for 3 hours. Me and Marty could have went back and forth. I know he could have, because he kept texting me all Sunday afternoon. I was good with it. It didn't wear me out, brother. I told Lori, I said, man, Marty's fired up. I loved it. I loved it. And you know why? Because we're rightly seeing Him. When we rightly see Him, it unlocks and it opens. Man, if I can get y'all to right, not religion. Not religion. Not church. I love church. Church is important. All these people, the biggest movement right now is the non-church movement. I don't need to go to church. Me and God got our own thing going on. Mm-hmm. Talk to me in 5 years and see how that works for you. Talk to me in 5 years and see how that works for you. It won't. But if I can get people to where they come in and they rightly see and they have genuine encounter, then that carries them to a place of transformation. And their worship, I got sidetracked sideways a little bit. We were talking about worshiping simply out of a place of compassion, because we feel like it's the right thing to do and God needs it. And so I'm going to come in here and so I'm going to give Him my little bit of worship. Man, I'm just going to say it. Y'all know me. I'm sorry. I stick my foot in my mouth all the time anyway. I really don't understand what the point is of coming in and doing just 2 or 3, radio worship songs. And y'all know what I mean by radio worship songs. It means it's 3 minutes to point A to point B, and you've got to do it just like this, and it's got to be, you know, it's got to be like that, and it's got to be cut off because we're going to keep everything in this time constraint and all that. And I'm kind of like, man, what's the point? If we can't get in here and get raw with him, I'm not saying it's got to go 2 hours. But I'd rather have one song that got real and right. That new song we did Sunday morning. I don't even know who authored that or the worship group that came out with that. Man, that was new and on me. But oh my gosh. It caught several levels. I got so messed up. That stuff that God was speaking to me about Madeline and what she represented and all of that stuff, man. And she jumped in one point of that song. And, dude, when she jumped in, I don't know if any of y'all caught it but me, but it went from here to here just because it was a different sound. And immediately the Lord spoke to me and he said, that's the future generations that are in her that is making that sound. And I couldn't do nothing but start crying when he said that. I told James Monday. I just stood right there and started. I'm sorry, Lee, y'all wasn't here either. I just started crying because it was a sound. It was a significant sound. It's like, whoa! And I'd rather do one like that than saying, all right, let's catch our list and let's catch our three radio songs. You know, our radio worship. Y'all know what I mean. You know, it's when you take when the heaven meets earth with a sloppy, wet kiss and you change the wording because you don't want to offend anybody. And that makes me want to throw up. I'm like, leave in our sloppy, wet kiss. That's what God put on their heart to sing. But we come in and we give out of compassion and we worship out of compassion. And it's the least mature place that we can give out of. It's the least mature place that we can worship out of. Anybody got any comments on that before I jump to the second one? Anybody got any comments? Everybody good? The second place that I believe that we give and we worship out of is vision. And I believe these things are progressive. I believe that giving out of vision and worshiping out of vision is a more mature expression than simply giving out of compassion, but it's still way inferior to giving out of honor. And when we're talking about giving out a vision, that would be we come in and we're like, you go down to Honduras and Keith, you go down to Honduras next week and you see, the ministry building that Marty and them are building. And you're like, oh man, this is cool. I can see we could do this and 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 we could do that. And build the ministry. You know what? Build the ministry. So you get caught up in the vision, and you get back and you say, man, I'm gonna send Project World a check. And we're gonna put that, and we've all done it. And I'm not saying it's bad. He'll take it. Cause it does take concrete and all of these things. And I go there and I'm the same way, man. We need to drill a well over here and we're gonna build a soccer field over here and all that stuff. And that's vision stuff. We want to cast vision and get people caught up in our vision. They did it when they rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem. It was Ezra that went back and rebuilt the temple, right? Wasn't it Ezra that went back and rebuilt the temple? And of course, we know Nehemiah went back and rebuilt the walls. And so they said, you know, man, they're sitting here and Jerusalem is in waste. It was ransacked by Nebuchadnezzar. And man, it's terrible the place that these people are in. So let's go back and let's rebuild these walls. We wanna come in and people get caught up on vision. And if we came in, I've always heard, especially when I was coming out of the Baptist church in the years I pastored the Baptist church, one of the things that went around with all the leaders and the church builders and all of this stuff, I mean, as far as church growth people, was they always said that if you're not building, you're gonna stop growing. If you're not building, you're going to stop growing. And what they were saying, as long as you can keep a building project going, it keeps people engaged, it gives them purpose, and all of that stuff, and they get involved. So when we finished the Family Life Center, then we got to do something else. And then we got to do something else. And then we got to do something else. And we get caught up in those things, and those things are fine and good, but they're still inferior. Because I don't come in here and talk about a bunch of vision and all that. What I want to talk about is us coming in, and instead of you capturing my vision that I have for building something, I'd rather you gaze into the eyes of our King and fall madly in love with Him. And then when that happens, and you get in this crazy deep love affair, then I don't have to worry about keeping you stimulated by a building project. Nehemiah got folks fired up. Man, let's go build these walls. It was a good thing he did. I am not knocking Nehemiah at all. Great thing he did. Great thing. Awesome. But you know who was able to tap into that and basically fund the huge portion of that? A heathen king. I guess my point in this, guys, is I want to go beyond what a natural man can do. And if you're setting the standard of how you want to live your Christian life based on something that a non-kingdom man can do, then I contend your standard's way too low. Amen. That's a good word, Sid. I'll amen myself on that. Red, if I come in and I say, man, I just want to have this vision, and I want to eliminate this, and I want to eliminate this, and man, I want to come in and I want to combat hunger, and I want to combat water issues and all of that stuff and everything. But you know what the Word tells me to do? To ask God for the nations. And if I believe for the nations and I walk in such a place of relationship with Him that God begins to give me the nations, then you know what's going to happen? Starvation's going to be eliminated. Poverty's going to be eliminated. Because I come in as a tree. We come in as a tree. We raise up people as a tree that bear fruit 12 months a year. And when you start doing that, the issues start taking care of themselves. Y'all think about that statement that I just made. Backing up just a little bit. That if my goal, the lid to what I think I can achieve, is something that Bill Gates can do. And I always want to say David Gates, you know, bread. That's old parking music, you know. Y'all too young. Y'all don't know nothing about no bread, do you? They are young. Oh my. Kathy knows about David Gates and bread. I guarantee you she does. I always want to say David Gates. I'm regressing. I'm talking about some good serious stuff here. We're just keeping it real, right? Keeping it real, right? Y'all just jealous because y'all's marriage ain't like yet. She said, keep rolling. But if I set my standard based on something that Bill Gates can do, then I am settling on something that is way inferior of a supernatural God and a supernatural King that I'm in relationship with. Amen. I just want somebody to partner. God wants somebody to partner with Him on that. You know how many years people have been building ministry buildings in Honduras, Marty? Since the doggone Spaniards came in and conquest everything. You know, they did it in the name of religion. They just really won't go. And you know why it does good stuff, but you know why I don't think it carries us over the... We'll get football here. It carries us into the red zone. But just getting into the red zone doesn't do it. I'm going to pray deeper next week while we're down there. We're going to feed people. We're going to build two houses. We got a bunch of clothes we're carrying. We got toys we're carrying. But I'm believing way more than God. Man, it's awesome that you fed these guys this week. How do we come in and change the trajectory of a nation? That's the real question that we've got to come in and ask ourselves. What's the root of these things? What's the heart of God in these things? And when we come in and we simply give out of vision, it's good. But it's got a lower lid. Let's talk about worshiping out of vision, because we worship out of vision too. Because we know what the Bible says about worship. And how many times have we come in and said, man, let's just come in. I even got on this a few weeks ago over in the side room. If you guys on the worship team will remember this. We come in and we say, man, we're going to come in and we're going to control the atmosphere. We're going to change the atmosphere. We're going to capture the atmosphere. How many times have we said that? I know you've said that. I've said it. I've preached it. I have said it. I have said it in the, you know, got slobbering and said it in the side room. We're going to change the atmosphere tonight. These folks are going to come in. They're going to feel Jesus and all that stuff. That's good. But how about if I just come in and my love affair with Yahweh is what changes the atmosphere? Not the fact that I worship because I know what it can do. Y'all see the difference? See, that's coming in, and that's in a sense, that's reverse engineering it. Because we're saying this is the result, and how do I bring the result back to this place? And it's, well, then we come in, and you know what we do, is we start charismatically formulating stuff.
It puts us in a place of striving to create something when we worship Him. He's going to do that. We don't have to do anything but just, like you said, a love affair with Him. We're not striving. I mean, one thing He's been speaking to me, even in prayer, it's like He'll just whisper, stop striving. Stop striving. You know, you don't have to try to beg me or make me do something. I want to do it. Just rest and just be and just trust and stop striving.
Sometimes He has to just tell me to shut up and be still. God, I'm praying in tongues and I'm doing this. He told me that Sunday down there. He's like, just shut up and be still. And I was praying in tongues when He told me that. I'm serious. I don't know how He taught. He has taught me kind of blunt. That's why I'm kind of blunt. To get my attention, you know. He doesn't come up and speak to me in King James, you know, and it's like, thou wast brother. He's like, Sid, shut up and listen. I'm like, okay. And it was good when I did. But simply coming in and giving and worshiping out of vision, it's good. I'm not saying these projects aren't. Man, they are. Jeff Owens trying to buy some land in the Philippines for that bunkhouse right now. I encourage everybody. Let's step up, man, and let's send some money over there. Maybe, you know, we can discuss it as a leadership team Monday night and talk about, you know, what do we want to do and all of that stuff. And that's important. But don't let it stop there. I get back to my statement a while ago, and I'm not hating on Bill David Gates or anything like that. I'm simply saying, I don't know where he's at. He may be our sold out kingdom man, and I just hadn't heard yet. But I know he's a great philanthropist. He is a great philanthropist. But I do not want to stop at a place that a philanthropist can live at. I want to go beyond that. I want to go to a place that the atmospheres are changed. The heavenlies. The territorial stuff. That unlocks things. And that doesn't come from these first two places. We could kind of liken it to the Old Testament. You know, you got the outer courts and then you got the inner courts, but then you got a veil in the Holy of Holies. The thing is how far do we want to go in this, guys? And here's the cool thing about this, what we were talking about a while ago, that we can't true and pure worship, we cannot enter into that, or true and pure giving, until we rightly see Him. But as we rightly see Him, then we're going to rightly see ourselves. And that's the thing that liberates all of us, because before we rightly see Him, we're always going to think that I'm too small, that I'm unworthy, I've sinned too much, I've done too much bad stuff, I thought too much bad stuff last week, I lost my temper the other day, I did this, I did this, I did this, and I did this, and we're constantly taking ourselves out of the game. And you know why we do that? Because we're not rightly seeing Him. If one of my grandchildren ever doubts that they are special and loved and amazing and all of that, you know what all they have to do is come look at Gigi and Poppy. And when they rightly see the way we look at them and the things that we think about them and the way that we love them, then immediately all that stuff's gone. Let's relate that back to the Father, guys. You got any of you that are struggling with self-identity, you're struggling with your righteousness, you're struggling with your beloved status and all of that because of your list, I'll tell you how to fix it real quick. Gaze into the eyes. That's how you do it, guys. That's how you do it. You ever get into this place of self-loathing? You ever get in this place where I'm too big a screw-up? Because everybody tells me I'm too big a screw-up. You know, there's one person that will not tell you you're too big a screw-up. You know who that is? That's the Father that loves us amazingly, ridiculously loves us and pursues us. Let me check something here. We're good. We got 18, 19 minutes. The third place. And this is where I want to kind of come in. We talked about compassion, giving and worshiping out of compassion. We talked about giving and worshiping out of vision. But now I want to talk about the superior place, and that's giving and worshiping out of honor. Giving and worshiping out of honor. This is where we are in Genesis right here. I'm going to read my notes real quick, and then we're going to actually study this text. Just the first couple of lines of my notes. We rightly see and recognize Yahweh. We are moved by the beauty and weight of His holiness and righteousness. We see and honor the people that He has brought into our lives. We see past any need. We see past vision. And we give simply out of honor. All right? Let's come in and let's look at the story of Abraham and Melchizedek. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 14. And I'm going to give you the backstory on the first 11 verses real quickly. There was a Lot had separated himself from Abraham because he was more interested in being big than he was in being significant. We'll probably talk about that some Sunday morning. Because Sunday we're going to talk about, can we position ourselves to a greater place of access to God and from God to heaven and from heaven? Did Abraham win the Christian lottery? Or did he do something that caused God to choose him? And we're going to develop that. That's going to be some good stuff. But Lot came in, and Lot said, man, I'd rather be big than connected to this. Big mistake. Big, huge, huge mistake. Don't settle for being big. Because there's a difference in being big and being great. There's a difference in being big and being significant. And he chose big. So he wound up living in Sodom. And there was a war that took place. And there were, I think, 9 kings, 5 kings, 4 kings on one, 5 kings on one side, 4 kings on the other side. Basically, and I don't know how to pronounce this, I'm not even going to try. One of the kings, the other smaller kingdoms were paying tribute to him. And they did this for about 12 or 13 years, and finally they got tired of it, and they said, we're tired of paying these ridiculous taxes, and so they rebelled. And so he came in with his armies and just started crushing all of them. And they went out to this this big battle, and the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah and two other kings went out, and Lot was with them, and Lot got captured, okay? So you've got this strong king, this strong army, and they captured Lot. Big mistake when they captured Lot. They didn't know who they were getting, but they captured Lot. And so I love the story that Abraham, I think, had 318 trained servants. And, man, we could do some serious teaching on that, that he already had 318 trained servants. They were trained. They were ready. You know, study to show thyself approved. Amen. Being the instant in season, being right relationship, being right standing. Don't try to, when crisis comes up, that you try to work yourself back into that spot. So he had these 318 men. All he had to do was arm them. And they go out, and I'm still amazed that 318 men can defeat a whole army. But they did. And they went out and they defeated the army. And in the book of Genesis and also in the book of Hebrews in the King James, it said that it was a slaughter. That was the word it used, was slaughter. The slaughter of the kings. So they whooped up on them good. So much so that they got all the stuff that they had taken from Sodom and Gomorrah and all these other places. And so it said that they went in and they got all the stuff. They got all the people. They defeated this army and all of that. And they come back from this great victory. Abraham rescues Lot, which was his goal, his mission. Then there's a good story in that too. Our heart should be people and not stuff. Our heart should be people and not stuff. Now I know that that part of our inheritance is land as well, but ultimately it's the people that will inhabit the lands. So you know, we come in and we see this going down and taking place. So we are, verse 14, and when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he was his nephew, but he was his brother, right? He armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them into Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot, and his goods, and the women also, and the people. Verse 17, and the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and the kings that were with him at the valley of Sheba, which is the king's dale. So, the king of Sodom, not trying to get bogged down in the storyline here, but the king of Sodom, when they were being defeated in this place, he fled. The king of Gomorrah, they fled. So they did not get captured. They scared. They ran. They got out of there. And after Abraham went and defeated these armies, and he comes back with all the stuff and all the people, then the king of Sodom goes out to meet him. And verse 18, but somebody else came out to meet him also. And it said, and Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine. And he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And he gave him tithes of all. Now, we'll jump over into Hebrews in just a second, but I'll give you my personal opinion on Melchizedek. And I personally believe that Melchizedek was a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. I believe that that this was not an angel. There are too many things that it says about him that make me believe this. It said that he had no beginning and no end. He had no father. He had no mother. It said that he was a priest and a king. And they said his kingdom was peace. He was the king of Salem. His kingdom was peace. And so he comes out and he meets. Man, I love this. It's so beautiful. I can just see Abraham coming back from this fight, and he is grimy, he is dirty, he is bloody. You know, back then they didn't fight wars with joysticks and drones. I mean, you getting bloody in the fray. You know, maybe he washed himself off and all of this, but he comes out of this heat of the battle, and the first thing we see in one verse is the king of Sodom runs out, and then all of a sudden, when the king of Salem comes out, it's like the king of Sodom disappears. You notice he's not in this conversation. It's not like all of a sudden we got this three-way conversation between Abraham, the king of Sodom, and Melchizedek. It's like, dude, Melchizedek's here, ain't nobody else around. When you rightly see Jesus, everything else pales in comparison. When you rightly see Jesus, everything else pales in comparison. When you rightly see Yahweh, everything else pales in comparison. When you rightly feel and know and experience the Holy Spirit, everything else pales in comparison. It's like it ain't even there, comparatively. And so he comes in and he has this encounter with him, and Melchizedek shows up. And you know what he brings? Y'all gonna love this. Brings bread and wine. It brings bread and wine. He said, we're about to commune together. Later on, before God destroys Sodom and he comes out and he hangs out with Abraham, you know what they do? They eat lunch. I love the sign in your kitchen. I don't know if it's still in there, but the one about after the resurrection that Jesus didn't come in and preach a sermon or in all that stuff. It said that he made breakfast for his friends. And he comes in and he wanted to fellowship with them and he wanted to commune with him. He came bringing something. And he says, man, I come. My most significant thing right here is I want us to commune. God, y'all know what God's ultimate goal is on this right now, guys? We talk about returning back to first Adam and the authority and dominion, and all of this stuff about the authority that Adam had in the Garden of Eden and all of that. And that way everything is made in proper order and all that. All that is true and all that's well and good. But you know ultimately what his biggest desire is, Paul? He just wants to walk with you in the cool of the day. Yeah, when you're in that relationship, yeah, man, you're going to walk above the curse. You're going to walk in authority. You're going to walk in all of those places. But the big thing he wants, man, is he's like, dude, I just want to hang out with you. I just want you to be in such close proximity that you hear my footsteps before I even get there. I hear him coming. I feel the ground move. That's how in tune I am. That's his end game. His end game ain't trying to take all this back over again. Dude, he could do that like that. All he's got to do is dispatch Michael and say, take care of business, boy. The sin debt's been paid, guys. It's been paid. That happened on Calvary's cross. Jesus got the keys a long time ago. He came back with all the keys to death, hell, and the grave. It ain't like we 80% done, you know, and we got to get that other 20%. His end game is he simply wants to hang out with Abraham. He wants to be in the garden with me and you in the cool of the day. And so he comes bringing this. And Abraham's moved, man. I believe Abraham knew exactly who he was. It wasn't a question of who are you or anything like that. He knew exactly who he was. So the word says Abraham came in and he gave him a tenth of everything he had. Everything that he had, all the booty. He gave him everything. Gave it all to him. He said, I give you a tenth of everything I have. A tithe. That was before the tithe was the law, guys. That was before the it was written by Moses. He was just so moved by a place. You know what he gave out of? Honor. Melchizedek had zero need. He didn't need nothing. Dude, he was without beginning and without end. Without mother, without father. He was the king of Salem. A king and a priest of the Most High God. He did not need 10% of all the booty that he got took back. or the stuff that Abraham had. He had zero need. He had zero vision. He didn't come in and say, man, Abraham, look what we can accomplish together. Man, let's do something. We're going to build this, and we're going to build this, and we're going to build this. And I'm not against building, guys. I'm just saying building's the fruit, not the root. Come on, somebody. Compassion is the fruit, not the root. Because I know compassionate people that are lost as a ball in high weeds. It's a good virtue. But the honor came in when they knew who he was talking to. And he's having communion with the King of Salem, the King of Peace. He's having communion with him. And he comes in and he gives out of that place. He gives out of that place. And the thing that God started speaking to me about giving out of honor is when I come in and I rightly see God, and then I rightly see God in people, in ministry, and things like that. And so, you know what we do? When I rightly see God in it, then that moves me to give into it. That's superior. Because it's coming in and it's placing. I don't want this to be awkward for you, Marty. But here we go. Just hang in there, buddy. You got to be tough if you're going to hang around me. I heard about all the good stuff that Marty and Krista were doing in Honduras. And so, y'all got a good report in the community, Marty. I say that to encourage you. Y'all got a very good report in the community. And I'd heard those things. And I called Marty up, and I'm like, man, let's do lunch one day. I want to talk to you. And we went and ate at Bilbo's, I think, the first time. We went and ate at Bilbo's. And I said, man, we want to kind of get involved in some mission stuff, you know. It wasn't out of honor. It was more out of vision. It was more out of vision. But once we started moving in this thing, and after we did that first trip together, I tell you when it quickened in me. Was when I stepped off the plane in Tegucigalpa. We hadn't even done any ministry together down there, but when we stepped off the plane in Tegucigalpa and my feet hit the ground and I breathed that air, and I knew, and Lord said the same thing, that we're like, man, this is it. And it went from a vision thing to all of a sudden I was rightly seeing. I don't mean to ignore you guys. I just got a prop right here, and I don't want to sit on your head, okay? So I'm just going to prop up right here. Are y'all good? Y'all feel like I'm ignoring you. It went from a vision thing to all of a sudden I was rightly seeing Yahweh and the people that Yahweh was connecting us with. And then it became a thing of not compassion. Oh, they need money. Tell me one overseas ministry that doesn't need money. Every one of them do. I don't care. I get emails from Katie Davis. Katie Davis got it going on. I still get emails from her once a week. Help support our building project. Everybody needs money. It goes from compassion to vision, but then we start recognizing that God has done this, that God is... James, you know what the greatest thing about our relationship... Me and James have known each other since James was probably 16 years old. James, isn't that pretty safe? You know, I married him and Tammy like 6 months after that. A few years after. It wasn't much after that. But God... James started working with me as a teenage boy. And... the thing that makes mine and James' relationship so special is because it is a relationship. I feel like I can safely say this from both ways. It is a relationship that is based on honor to Yahweh for connecting our lives together. because I don't view James as a good employee and a good guy and talented and all of that. I view him as somebody that God has brought into my life, and I view myself as somebody that God has brought into his life. So our relationship and the bedrock of our relationship is one of honor, and it's not just, oh, I honor him and he honors me, but we honor Yahweh for bringing these amazing people into our life. So then it goes way beyond compassion. Oh, he needs me, so I'm obligated to do this. Or even he's got good vision. It goes to a place then of giving myself. And I'm not talking about just resources, guys. I'm talking about everything that we come in and we give ourselves, our time, our energy, our focus, our love, and all of that stuff. That's one reason I love his kids so intensely. I don't hang out with his kids. They're in our life group. I see them some. I don't hang out with his kids. But I love his kids with a ferocity. And you know why? Because I honor this relationship. I see that with you and Errol and a lot of y'all's friends, Aaliyah. And I admire that in y'all. Y'all don't ever think that what y'all have got, what some of you guys that are buddy rows with you know, y'all know what I'm talking about. Y'all's a little group of, you know, couples and girls and all of that stuff. That's special. That's special. You know what that is? That's a God thing. That's not a thing, oh, I finally found a BFF. That's not that. That's a God thing. A God thing. And when we put the proper weight on it, then the way we move in it and through it and give to it and all that, then it's done out of a place of honor to Him. And that is a gateway for depth. So that's what happened with us and Marty and Krista. I mean, you may talk to him. He's like, man, I don't even like said that much, but you know, he brings a good word. But that's the way we feel about this. And it happened quick. It happened quick. First time I met Damon Thompson, man, it was like a Jonathan David thing. I don't agree with everything he says. We ain't BFFs. He don't call me up all the time, man. I might get a text once every few months, or I'll text him once every few months. I don't want to bother him much, and he don't bother me much. We don't hang out. But there is such a deep level of honor. I've had certain places, and he's a busy cat. Now, I'm not even talking about it, but before, when he was traveling all over the world and all that, we have had more than one occasion where we're like, dude, we got something going on, and we really need to sit down and talk with you. Without exception, you know what he's always said? I'll meet you. How quick? It'd take me 3 hours to drive there. Can y'all come up here tomorrow? Am I telling the truth, Lori? You know what that is? That's a God thing. I put weight on that. See, what we do is we go through life and our relationships are based on compassion, need, or like vision. I like him, man. We got a lot in common, man. We can come in and we talk about the Falcons and the Bulldogs and the hunting and fishing and all of that stuff. But I want to tell you something, guys. When you get in something that's way deeper than that, that has the capacity. That is the gateway to carry you into some deep, amazing places. Some of y'all need to get there with your marriage. I don't like to look at anybody when they're always talking to me. I'm going to look at all of you, okay? I'm not talking to anybody specifically. But there are people in this house that need to do that in their marriage. Because you know how they function in their marriage? They function out of compassion. I better spend some time with my wife. I'm going to be in the doghouse. Right? That's inferior. That's inferior. I got people coming to my mind right now. None of y'all, of course, but I've got people coming to my mind right now. They're in this house. That's how they function in their marriage, the compassion. You know, there's a need, so I need to spend some time with my kids, and, you know, so I'm gonna take one for the team, and, you know, we'll do this, man. I guess we'll go on vacation together. You know why I don't do guy trips with y'all all the time? I don't call you up all the time and say, Paul, let's go fish. I enjoy doing stuff for you, brother. I would enjoy doing stuff with a lot of people in here, but you know why I don't do it? Because as much as I love you and as much as I appreciate you and as much as I feel like it's a God thing and we're connected, which I do and I honor that, I'd still rather be with her. I choose her. You know why I choose her? Because it's an honor thing. You know why I'm infatuated with her? Because it's an honor thing. It's not because she's smoking hot. She is smoking hot. It's not because she's fun. She is fun. She's crazy. We have a good time. But you know why this thing is so deep? And I'm trying to get y'all to tap into some of this. You know why this thing is so deep? Because it's an honor thing. Because when she came into my life, it was Yahweh that brought her there. And I wasn't looking. Not for that. Not for that. And when we come into this place of honor, and we give out of honor, and we begin to worship out of honor, that's when stuff like Sunday happens. When we come in here and we're just like, doggone, man, I don't want to change the atmosphere. I just want to rightly look on Him. And you know what? You know what true and pure worship is? My appropriate response to rightly looking on Him. Because when I rightly see Him, it's going to require a response. When I rightly see her, it will require a response. When I rightly see her as my daughter, as being just a, and I honor her in that place and all of this stuff, not just love her because she's my seed, but when I right, she is a man, an awesome, godly woman. So thankful that she's my daughter. Man, I see all these horror stories and all of these families just going through this and going through this and going through this and going through this. And you know what? It ain't touched my doorstep. It hadn't. I'm not saying I've done everything right. I've done some things right. But I'm saying I'm recognizing that's where it's coming from. That's the source of all of this, guys. That's the source of all this for all of us that we can tap into. Casey, you don't have to struggle with your boys. You don't have to. The world will say, wait till them teenage years. It's going to be hell. Just make it through them teenage years. You don't have to. There's not been a season in our life that we did not love. There's not been a season in their life that we did not I loved every season they've been in. Everyone. I'm telling y'all guys, the honor thing is superior. And the whole thing about honor, it's not coming in and saying, I'm going to be honored. It's not being honorable. Please hear that. Because we can come in and a doggone Marine can be honorable. When I say it's coming out of a place of honor, it is rightly seeing God, rightly seeing the people He has brought into our lives, and the appropriate response to that, that's honor. Standing up when a woman comes in a door, that, when a room, that's honorable, but that's not honor. You see the difference? And the superior thing, it's going to trump compassion. It's going to trump vision, although both of those are good. But see, here's the thing. Let me go back to this thing just a second. And what time is it? I feel like I'm out of time. 8:07. Okay. They're having a party back there, though, aren't they? Makes it worse. All right. Yo, give me about 3 minutes. See, I want to throw out one thing right here. Because here's what we do. Is we will come in and we will say that if I go to this deep honor thing and this love affair with Christ and all of that stuff, then what about the James Christianity? What about the food? What about the clothes? What about the shelter? What about that stuff? When we move beyond a place of compassion and vision for Marty and Krista. And I'm talking about just in the last 12 months. You know what's happened out of that? Just in the last 12 months. Not what we've done in them, but what God has done into ministries that they are connected to down there. Just out of this little house right here, there's been $15,000 go into the nursery at Mia Esperanza. $15,000. You know what birthed that? Is us recognizing, and I'm not saying me recognizing. I'm saying people involved. I'm saying Marty and Krista. I'm saying us. I'm saying Jacob and Stephanie, different people like that, recognizing and saying, God, this feels right. This feels right. This is something that you connected. Marty and them went down there and you know, they knew soil and them, all this stuff. But the one thing that I love when we go down there is the networking. Randy, you'll go down there and you got, man, this ministry over here and this ministry over here. And these folks is Church of Christ. And usually Church of Christ, in Bremen, Church of Christ and Pentecostals like us, we don't get along. Just because we're not like them. Not saying we dislike them or they dislike us. Maybe they don't dislike us. I don't know. But it ain't our tribe, so we ain't hanging. And we'll go down there and God's got everything woven together. And it's beautiful. And so you got over $15,000 that's going into a daycare down there that they're working on right now in honor of Rylan. You know, David comes up and we do a little fundraiser for him at the house and raise $50-something hundred in one night. I told Marty when we did, I said, if we don't raise $5,000 tonight, I'll be shocked. Marty was like, really? David was like, really? I said, yeah. I said, if we don't raise $5,000, I'll be shocked tonight. $50-something hundred in one night. You know what that is? You know why? Because it was not birthed out of compassion. It was birthed out of honor for what God's doing in those guys and through those guys and the connection. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen. I can't wait to see what's going to happen in 2020. Just concerning that. But what about concerning our relationships? As I said a while ago, the reason you and your girlfriends, y'all are so tight in y'all's relationships is, you know why? Because there's an honor element there. It's not just, we've been buddies since we were in high school. Yeah, I remember carrying Tiff to Cabo with us when y'all were 14, 15, 16, something like that. It goes way deeper than that. And if you get hung up on that stuff, you're going to have a real low ceiling. I'm just telling you guys. You're going to have an 8-foot ceiling in your house instead of a vaulted ceiling. I could change anything in my house. I'd have higher ceilings. But back in the day, you did 8-foot ceilings. You've got to be energy conscious and all of that stuff. Biggest regret I got. Don't do it, Jacob. And you know what? We grew up in church with 8-foot ceilings. We grew up with worship in 8-foot ceilings. And God said, man, let's go somewhere with this. Let's go somewhere. I'm sorry I ran late. Let's stand to our feet. Paul, come here. If you need to slip out and rescue your child, then by all means do so. But